Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of the Comic Book Legion podcast. I was worried that I was going to say something else, but I mean that's Mark's thing.
That's me. Don't take it from me.
Hey guys, how are y'all doing today? You know, I'm so glad that we still have podcasting in this moment of chaos in the world, because if we couldn't even have podcasting, I don't know what I would do with myself. You know, it's just super crazy. Well, first off, Mark, how are you?
My life sucks, man. Okay, Tom Brady left the New England Patriots. I have no purpose. I don't know who I am anymore. I have never read so much Tampa Bay Buccaneers news. No, it sucks. And you know what? This whole as a huge introvert, me being home during this whole, you know, like house arrest kind of thing, I'm straight. I don't have to leave. So society, whatever. I don't, that part doesn't bother me.
No, it's so funny that I'm seeing like comic book creators share that meme that it says, when you realize quarantine life is your real life. And yeah, like, it's so true. It is so sad at the same time. And let me just say, I love watching the reaction videos of Tom being traded. They're hilarious.
It's been really like sensitive, because again, I have a lot of family in Massachusetts, but I also have a lot of family that have migrated from Massachusetts a long time ago, like 20 years ago, to South Florida. So it's just a huge, it's like a house divided between Dolphin fans and Patriot fans. So again, with football is the only sport that I am an irrational fan, where I get really like heated, but I also know that I love kind of seeing my family in Boston that are like just hardcore Patriot fans like I am, but I guess they're just crazier than I am. So I actually love feeding information to my uncle, who is like, you know, like you always have that one family member that's a really big instigator that loves just to kind of like throw that small little bomb and just waiting for it to like tick. And then once it explodes, it's amazing. So I was like, I figured
he's the gif with the popcorn. He's just like, yep, I'm just here to watch.
Yeah. So I sent him the information. I'm like, hey, I figured you would want to get like my aunt pissed off. So here, just let her know about Brady getting traded. I mean, that Brady is announcing that he's leaving and going to Tampa Bay. So then he did his magic. But again, my uncle is a Dolphin fan. So like, although I hate when he does it, I find it funny, because like I know what he's doing, and he's just the family troll. So you just have to accept him for what it is.
Are you a fan that like, you know what, I need to burn all of my Patriot Tom Brady stuff?
No, why? That's anybody that's upset with Tom Brady for what he's done for the New England Patriots for the past 20 years is an idiot. Either you are completely spoiled.
I absolutely love seeing those videos.
Yeah, I mean, I have to see it. Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure they're doing it for like likes, because I can't fathom that somebody would be upset with Tom Brady for wanting to leave.
Now, for me, like in my mind, I'm like, okay, they're grabbing the authentic jersey or whatever that they bought for $125, $125. And they're burning it. They're getting all of their memorabilia that they have spent hundreds of dollars on, and they're burning it. And I'm just like, all this for a like. And I understand that some of those videos get moved around. Some of those videos don't. So you're burning all your stuff for like 3 likes? That, okay. Like, good on you. Like, bravo. It's crazy how crazy fans are.
Yeah, that's stupid.
That's kind of hypocritical, because I have a stack of Brian Michael Bendis comics right here that I'm getting ready to sell or throw away. But, you know.
Well, I mean, selling and throwing away are two different things.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Yeah. So I would. That's fine.
I have separated all my Bendis stuff. And I'm like, okay, that needs to be moved in a separate location. But, you know, I will just say, I'm not going to go too deep into personal life with this, but the coronavirus has unfortunately affected me. We're all safe. We're not infected. I just know that somebody is quote-unquote sick from my job, and he is being waited. He is waiting to be tested. So it's like, it is real. It is like a real thing that I can no longer just be like, all right, it's not going to affect us. But in my state, in my city, the 25 people that have been like confirmed or whatever have apparently all had contact with each other, all 25. So it's not like, apparently there was like a large group of people in San Antonio that has done some traveling recently.
Okay.
And they are all infected. So it's not like just random people all over San Antonio are getting infected. But it's just a matter of time before we start hearing more and more cases. Which, I mean, try not to freak out. I did share that vulnerable moment on Twitter. I tried to go grocery shopping. It was super depressing. Seeing all the shelves completely empty. Thankfully, nobody in there was, like, super angry and, like, yelling at people. Because I don't think I would have handled that very well. But, you know, I was able to get some things. We're good. And we will, you know, we will survive. You know?
That's the perk of being Cuban and living in Charlotte. All the Latin and Cuban food that's there, nobody touches it because they don't know how to cook it. So what you need to do is you just got to come to Charlotte, and then you'll be able to get all the Latin food you need.
You know, and it's so funny because, you know, I put out into the Twitterverse, you know, hey, if there was ever a food that you don't buy normally that people wouldn't buy still during the apocalypse, what would it be? And you were talking about tuna, and I go through these aisles, right? And I'm looking at this stuff, and all the tuna, gone. All the tuna's gone. And
that's disgusting. Oh, God. Dude, if there's one food that I have always told my wife, and she's tried to, like, trick me before. I'm like, babe, if there is something that I will never eat, is tuna. Because there is nothing more off-putting than opening up that can, and the whole house just has that smell of tuna. Or like those moments that you know that she's eaten it, and her mouth, just her present, like her aura around the mouth just smells like tuna. It's like, I've never wanted to run away from home before, but I feel like at 34, when I smell tuna, I'm willing to consider it.
Yeah, all the tuna's gone, all the beans are gone, like all the quick food. Like, I'm surprised I didn't look at ramen to see if there was any of that left. But yeah, it is crazy. All meats, there's like random, like, the only thing of meats that is not taken are like steaks. Like the raw steaks. Of course, those are a little bit more pricey, so people aren't taking them. But when I was over there, people are starting to take them. So it's like, hey, this is our only option. If anything, we'll cut it up before we cook it, type thing.
Yeah.
So
well, during all this time and you staying home, have you been reading any other type of comics outside of like the weekly new releases?
I was wanting to, honestly. I do get Images and Valiant's review copies, and I was like, you know what? I really want to go back and grab some, like, and really start looking at some stuff again. I recently moved, if you look behind me into right here, I recently moved some stuff around, and I found some random trades that I have yet to read, so I'm thinking about picking those up and taking them to work. But I also was getting really bored, and so I did the project that Gail Simone had been doing for the, you know, this whole week, that comic school thing, because, you know, I do want to be a writer, and, well, I am a writer that wants to be in comics, and so I'm a part of that community. It's really cool. If anybody's interested in learning how to write comics, I feel that you should definitely try it. She has, like, five major threads on her Twitter right now, but if you join the Discord server, they're saved in, like, perfect location, so that way you don't have to, like, try to navigate Twitter to... because threads on Twitter, like after a few days, they get
they go all over the place.
Yeah, so somebody was nice enough to basically copy paste like everything that she talked about those days of class, quote unquote, and it's been cool, dude. I finished an 8-page script with like nice structure, and I haven't done that in quite some time. I've taken like a break from writing, and this is giving me like a new, you know, breath of fresh air, and like nice. Is actually, you know, I'm thinking about actually finishing that script, and people all over that community are starting to like collaborate and thinking about actually like pushing some stuff forward to push to publishers and things like that. So it's really cool. It's actually really, really cool. And hopefully some people, including myself, you know, get some stuff made. Making comics is always cool. And to have Gail Simone there like every once in a while to pop in for a Q&A is also kind of cool. So
nice. Like any mutuals that you know of?
No, actually. Like, I was really surprised with the big community that comic books or the comic book community has on Twitter. I did not see any faces or any names.
What about any notables?
Oh.
That you've, like, I guess you've probably have seen quite a bit, like, on Twitter.
No. No, everybody that I've interacted with is, like, for the very first time.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's really cool. And, you know, she calls the term Fred. It's a combination between friend and editor. We're all Freds to each other. And so when people ask, they're like, hey, I need somebody to look at the script. There's so many people, like, that's the cool thing about this community is, like, let's take me, for example. I can crap on Bendis any day of the week. Any day of the week. But when in that community, in that Discord server, I have not seen a single person at all say anything negative to anybody. And it's amazing, to be honest. Like, for people, because there's a comic chat, like there's a channel for comics, and people have difference of opinion, but there is never like heated arguments. And it's only been like a week in there, but so far, nobody is like.
Well, I mean, even with our own separate chat, I mean, besides you and Kevin, sometimes. but I think sometimes that happens more out of just like fun, because that's already been established. But outside of that, I mean, the discourse when you're actually talking about comics, it's actually completely different than what you get. It's like for some reason, like, how are you happy? How are you happy texting? And how are you an optimist, but then you're the ultimate cynic on another one? So I just think that, you know, when you know that you have a just an intimate audience, I think you get a little bit more of who the person really is, or at least that's what I hope. And then you get the one, you know, like Twitter is more of the, you know, I'll sell my soul so that I can get those retweets and stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy. But let's go on to some really quick comic news. I know there's not going to be a lot, but I'm just letting everybody know comics are still happening, you know, because of this pandemic. It's not like they've completely stopped. A lot of creators have, of course, gone directly to their house and work from home. There's been some creators that have taken pictures of, like, their office saying goodbye and then taking a picture of their new office at home. Comics are still happening. You know, nobody needs to worry about the end of comics. The one thing that, you know, I talked about, I think it was last episode, or I may have talked about it with Mark off air, talking about, you know, we will probably see an increase in digital comic sales more so than physical
comics. That was our last episode. Jeez, you don't even listen to our own show. No, I'm just kidding. I used to, but I hate listening to myself.
Yeah, same.
But you at least have a decent voice. My voice is annoying.
Hey, you know, the unaired episode has a really nice Dan Didio voice. I'm just saying.
No, it doesn't. It sounds like if I was like on my ninth mojito.
but yeah, comics are still happening. Randomly, Diamond decided to make New Comic Book Day on Tuesday of this week. I don't think that's going to happen anytime further. But also, call your local comic book shop or look online to see if they are doing curbside pickup or any type of delivery if you still buy physical copies. Those businesses are going to be hurting in the next few weeks.
Oh, big time, big time. Yeah,
next few months.
Ours because my comic book store is one of those that they honestly, they only do the big two. They only do big two, and they only do the huge sellers in indie. So sometimes it might just be The Walking Dead saga. Right now, the only book that's really been showing out there that I've been seeing is The Undiscovered Country from Snyder and Soul. But besides that, it's really just big two, unless you make like a, you know, like if you pay in advance, you know, they'll get the books for you. But what keeps that store afloat also is that they have their own like ice cream. So they have like a little ice cream parlor, like if you want to get some ice cream and stuff there. And like that's really what's been keeping them alive. And they're like everything that they're doing is curbside. But I mean, I definitely want to keep on supporting them because this is, I can only imagine that comic book stores are normally probably just going paycheck to paycheck. In a sense, like they are threading the red line. That this is probably, like, I hope there's not a large number of stores of people who have been thinking of closing, and this is just what pushes them over the edge.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think it will be. But hopefully, you know, one person made it a really big deal and has actually been trending on some people's Twitter. Some creators have even pushed that tweet saying that other publishers should consider at this time making books fully refundable to help comic book shops stay afloat. So, you know, just make those calls. You can, if you don't know about any comic shops in your area, go on to Google, type in comic book locator on Google search, and there is, I think it's the first link. There's a website dedicated to finding local comic book shops, and it's like a GPS, like, map thing. So, you know, if it's a weird time to start supporting a comic book shop, but maybe it would be the best time, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But let's go ahead and move on to books. I want to talk about, because it was surprisingly, like, a really good feel-good story, Aquababy is here. And not an infant.
Hey, Andy.
Yes, her name is Andy. And that was one of the big points that I wanted to talk to you about. Did you notice that Andy is actually the name that, remember, Aquaman Arthur was actually going under when he lost his memory?
Yes.
Yeah.
I actually thought that was a cool nod.
I thought it was pretty cool as well. For me personally, I'm just like, what does the name Andy have to do with Kelly Sue DeConnick? Because it's got to be something a little personal, or we will learn about the reveal of why the name is Andy, which I do feel like it'll be, oh, that's was my name when these people found me, and, you know, speaking to the gods or whatever that Aquaman has been hanging around with. But I just want to know, you know. But we do see Aquaman is living life, you know, normally, and is visiting Mira, you know. She is still in a coma. It looks like it has been a couple months at this point. There's a huge shift because not only do you see Aquababy a little bit older, but she is walking. Like, she is crawling and she is walking. So for me, I'm like, that's gotta be like more than 6 months, more than, like, in my mind. That's because I've never seen a three-month-old walk, you know?
No, yeah, for sure.
So I thought that was really surprising. We find she's a little adventurous and almost kills herself.
The reactions there, where I was like, oh, there she is. Like, I thought it was, but I feel like the reason why there's not a huge overreaction is because you could definitely tell, with this being kind of some time has passed, you could tell that this has been something that she has probably done multiple times. And I was actually here, I was Googling, trying to figure out maybe what is the name meaning of Andy? And it kind of looks like that it is strong, courageous, warrior, brave. So who knows what exactly that could be? Those can be, you know, characteristics that maybe Arthur considers Mara, with everything that she's been going through on her own. So I mean, I don't know. It's kind of cool. Because I mean, I would find it odd if he's like, oh yes, I named our daughter Andy after what Callie called me because no one knew my name. So I'm kind of
man.
Yeah,
Mira would be pissed.
Yeah, like that would be an awkward conversation. So yeah, but again, yeah, I really did enjoy this issue. Seeing those moments, I think what the reason now. That interview that Kelly Sue DeConnick did like several months ago, talking about how something tragic was going to kind of happen between them that will kind of like separate them. And we know what that was, which was Arthur's reactions to finding out she was pregnant. But I feel like these kind of moments, now I understand what's going to be the bond that brings them together stronger than ever, which is when he doesn't have Mira and he's there now on his own. Well, yes, he does have his own extended family with like the gods and stuff like that. But seeing how happy he is, like with his daughter, like that's
it's really feel good.
Yeah, it definitely is that. He's like, you're daddy's girl kind of thing, and dads usually have very strong bonds with their daughters. So to me, I loved it. I thought it was really. I mean, I posted it today just because. I figured, it's Thursday, it's a day after, but seeing that picture with Arthur, like, finally getting into Mara's room.
Yeah.
There's something about that, I don't know, I'm really digging this dynamic, where even though Mara is literally, like, in a self-induced coma, there's, I don't know why, but I feel like there's still Mara in there, like there's character, and you see that little subtle nod, I don't know if you see it. With everything that he does say, you do see when he's like heading out, you do see that she's crying.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's
it was very subtle, but it was nice. It was a nice addition, and there's something with that. The small additions to small little details that writers and artists do that I actually want to talk about in Unkillables later. But yeah, I did notice her crying. That was one of the biggest things, I think, is, these moments that Aquaman... Because you notice that Aquaman has been coming every day to see Mira, like, later in the night. So that way, those priests, or whatever you want to call them, the council, doesn't get angry at him. Because they are very judgmental of Aquaman at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, he does come in every night and talk to her, and it's usually with Andy, but today he is, flying solo, and so the doctor says, hey, keep it very happy, don't get too grim or whatever, and I really enjoyed it. Now, we do get some moments with Ocean Master, and I am just now noticing, I don't think I've finished this book.
Oh,
with the whole Ocean Master.
Well, it's really just Ocean Master is just, working the undergrounds, and he's really trying to, to get back into the game. But the interesting part from there is that you're seeing the tension building because his plan is starting to formulate, while Volko really needs what Mara has planned. Like, she needs it to happen now. Because in order to protect the throne, Volko needs to go public. So, I mean, I don't necessarily know how I feel, because I feel like when you read Aquaman in the New 52, Volko was more respected. Then, yes, he betrayed Arthur and what he believed was in the name of Atlantis. And now you're kind of seeing him more becoming something of like a comedic relief. But it's not only a Kelly Sue thing, because this was happening also with during Abnett's run, and I believe, and I think you started seeing that a lot during like the Sedgwick, when Sedgwick was doing the art, when Arthur was no longer king. So I don't necessarily know what they're doing with Volko. I mean, I like it because I do find it somewhat humorous. I'm like, dude, this guy's like nothing how I know him as, but for some reason I'm finding it humorous. But it could just be that he's like the bumbling old man. Kind of thing, and sometimes or maybe she's just doing it well, but I still don't know how to process. I'm like, man, this is not like the Volko I know, or like what happened to him that's kind of made him get to this point. Besides that, yeah, with Arthur kind of like talking about the plans and stuff like that, and he's actually speaking with Tula, they find out when he's going to speak with Andy that Andy is not there, so she is gone. Now, is it on purpose? Did she do it on her own? Or is this, you know, something that Ocean Master is doing? Or is this, you know, after Volko announced himself, is this, you know, something with, like, the sisterhood? Or the widowhood? Motherhood? I don't know. Motherhood. The Kritia. I think she's, like, the main one that you always see. So, I mean, is this something? Or, you know, could this be...
Way,
or this, like, hey, this can be, like, a Frozen 2... And this, I haven't even seen Frozen 1, but yesterday my son wanted to see Frozen 2. So we saw Frozen 2, us three, and my wife. And, you know, have you seen it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like that voice, the that thing?
Yeah.
And she's like, so who knows? Maybe
nice vocals.
Thank you. So maybe Andy found a water horse, and now she's going to the hospital to revive her mom. Maybe. That's not gonna happen.
Intense. No. it's funny. You know, I will admit I really enjoyed Frozen 1. And then because of it, me, my wife, and my wife's best friend went to go see Frozen 2 in theaters when it came out. We were the only adults by ourselves. Everybody else was a family with kids. And we were like, we're those people now. Oh no.
No, I was actually kind of proud of myself for never have seeing like the first one, but then he's like, puppy, come on, moving, because I was like, all right, you guys watch it, I'm gonna go play like MLB the Show. But he's like, no, watch a while. I'm like, puppy, I'm not gonna know anything of, I'm not gonna know what's going on. But I ended up seeing it, and I'm like, yeah, it was pretty good.
It was I didn't like it as much as the first one, and my little sister here, since she is going freaking bananas without being able to do anything much of anything, she wanted to watch it the other day, and so a lot of us watched it. I was going in and out, but it's good. And then she freaking rocked out to the song at the very end, sung by that Panic at the Disco dude. But yeah, let's go ahead and move on to Unkillables, deceased Unkillables. You know, we were speculating whether this book was supposed to be coincide with the first deceased book, but we learned with this issue number 2 out of the 3 issues that this is actually taking place after the end of deceased.
Well, actually, you see a moment where it's this issue's pretty much coinciding with the end.
Yes.
Yeah, like right before they leave. Because here, yes, you have the Cassandra Cain, Gordon, Jason Todd. Here they are. They're in a building, and they are kind of in one way or another, they're babysitters. Because here they are. They're in this building, and they are taking care of, I believe it was mentioned here, like 43 kids. In the meantime, you have Vandal Savage, Lady Shiva, Mirror Master, Bane. They're all in another pocket where they found a safe space. But yes, we do find here, and you do see them kind of communing, going back and forth in between.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of wanted to know exactly where were they in this part of the story, because you really didn't get any kind of clarity in the first one. So seeing the distress call from Lois and saying that they're going to be leaving to, you know, we're going either to Themyscira or Poison Ivy's, like, a garden in Gotham. I don't know. I really liked it. And cause I was like, okay, cool. Because it gives me a sense of, like, all right, I know how dire the circumstances are now. Outside of, you know, dead heroes and dead villains and dead people, you know, it gives it another one of, like, oh, what's going to happen to these heroes?
Yeah, and we had a very much a Gordon moment. That moment where Gordon's like, we're not going anywhere. Like, we're not going to survive with 43 kids trying to get to these, you know, ships or whatever. And in my mind, I'm like, you have the Batmobile. You should tow a school bus with the Batmobile and get to one of those ships safely. Like, that's what you do. Like, that's what you should have done. But Gordon was like, no, you know, logically, we're not going to survive. So we're on our own. We're going to take care of these kids as much as we can until we die, basically. And, you know, Jason isn't completely for it, but in the end, he agrees to it. We do see Lady Shiva. She actually is with Mirror Masters. They visit Cassandra Cain. And they go back to where Vandal Savage is and everything, and he is pissed. He's mad. He is upset because, you know, he says, I have survived a millennia under certain circumstances because I was smart. Don't do something stupid like this because Mirror Master is our only way out, basically.
Yeah, he's like, he's an asset.
Yeah.
I mean, with him saying that, you knew that, like, Mirror Master's gone.
Yeah. And I love how Deathstroke is the voice of reason here. He's like, hey, Vandal, like, let's not, like, everybody else in the world is killing each other. Let's not, you know, kill ourselves kind of thing. And Vandal's like, all right, you know, hey, let me share with you my master plan. And at that moment, Deathstroke should have had been on high alert because, you know, they go into this separate room where Grundy is operating on freaking Creeper. His chest is completely open, and Creeper's just like, hey man, what's up? And Grundy completely knocks out Deathstroke. Deathstroke wakes up next to Creeper, and he's like, oh man, they got you too, huh? Though we got suckered in. Oh man.
And I do gotta say though that with these moments, huge props to the art team. Carl Mostert, Trevor Scott, Neil Edwards doing the inks, and colored by Rex Locus. I actually really enjoyed how this issue looked.
Yes.
There's something about these muted colors that I'm a really big fan of, and I don't know why, but it's... Although, you know, there are moments that some of the facial can look a little odd, especially, like, through profiles, but I think what I really did enjoy were how the colors are, and I think I kind of found, like, my strike zone on what kind of colors I love seeing in art, and it's really these kind of muted neutral colors.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought the art was great, but seeing that moment where Grundy just decks Deathstroke in the face.
And, like, his whole lower face just starts to, like, shift, and you really get the, like, you get the whole motion of it. It's really cool.
Yeah, I thought that was great, but also, within all of these people talking, I love the banter between that they know that the only way that they're going to survive this is not only them working together, which Gordon's having a lot of, you know, obviously, understandably, because most of these people have caused absolute mayhem in Gotham. And him as the commissioner has had to deal with it firsthand. So I guess I understand the trust issues. But secondly, yeah, it's also the fact that in order for this to work, they need to train these kids to become killers.
Yeah, they do end up getting into that school. And this is what I liked, that there is actually it's very subtle, but eventually when, you know, shit ends up hitting the fan... at this school, what's his name? Deadshot actually calls out one of the kids' names. Because you see Mirror Master grabbing the kid from the mirror and is pulling him in. And it's very subtle, but you can see that that Deadshot is calling his name. And I think that shows, okay, they have spent so much time together that they have formed relationships with these kids. And Deadshot being the guy that his motivation for being in the Suicide Squad is his daughter. Like, this shows, oh man, he legitimately wants to help these kids out. And he puts himself in danger's way, and he dies because of it.
Yeah.
And I thought that was kind of cool that he was able to sacrifice himself to save a kid.
Yeah, and I mean, and seeing it also with Grundy and the little change of his...
Yeah.
You know, ending it with Happy on Sunday, you kind of see the little moment with the girl and Cheetah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it's funny just seeing, like, these absolute monsters and just seeing them enact literally the worst scenario that Earth is doomed. And here they are just like in, like, they've never been happier, but they're happier because of, like, an actual happy reason, not because, yeah. These guys are so evil that they're just really happy because of all the crap that's happened. No, they're actually, because, like, they're feeling love.
You get those small, like, and I think that's what I really enjoyed out of The Walking Dead. You know, life is over, mainly, and they're still able to find those moments of, like, joy. And so that's what Tom Taylor is doing with these characters, which I really, really liked.
Yeah.
It's not all, like, doom and gloom, you know?
And I found it very, I liked how he used Mirror Master to be the one that kind of starts all of this. Because, yeah. You know, you always sort of wonder, like, all right, so how is it going to get bad? And you're seeing that moment between, of course, Bane and Ace. And, you know, man, this is, like, it's understandable that Ace would want to go after Bane. But then it's like seeing, you know, Mirror Master come after. I was like, oh, so that's how it happened. Because you kind of, like, in a way, you kind of forgot about him.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then it's like,
there was enough time between seeing Mirror Master, you know, last, and then when he comes back.
Yeah.
So it was very, very smart. But you notice how they keep putting Ace in a lot of danger. Like, I feel like Taylor's just teasing us for when he's eventually going to kill Ace.
He's going to kill the dog.
He's going to kill the dog.
Damn, that's brutal.
It's going to happen. And I'm going to have to give him props because, I mean, I called it from the very beginning. From issue one, I knew that, you know, like, hey, this is probably going to happen. But I don't think he's going to do it until the ending of the last issue.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you. So let's do, just because we're on a roll, we've read the last two issues of Nightwing. So I think that we've both kind of jumped on, and I think either, I don't know if it's because you're enjoying the story or you just believe that sooner or later we are due for, you know, Dick Grayson to come back. So let's just get on the train and kind of get invested. I did it. I read it last issue for that reason. This issue, I really read it just because, you know, that this is like a prelude to Joker War, and seeing Joker there, you know, I've kind of wanted to see, like, oh, well, let's see how does a Dan Jurgens handle Joker. So again, when I'm reading Nightwing, for some reason, I don't know if this has been just like a thing going on, but reading Nightwing now, it feels like the first three or four pages are kind of like the Flash. Everything seems like they're saying the same thing.
Yes.
And it's like
the
recaps.
That's the biggest problem with Nightwing right now, the book. Because ever since Rick Grayson got introduced, so right after he got shot, from that moment until now, there has still been recap of everything that's happened.
Yeah, so I feel that we're talking about, we're on page, if you're looking at it digitally, you're on page 7, and he's talking about everything that's going on in regards to the Talons and how he's still fighting his memories, and now... Yeah. It's like the story begins on page 8 after the whole, like, battle within Cobb. So I'm like, okay. Now, again, I don't really have a relationship with these characters because, again, I haven't been following Nightwing since, I think I read, like, 3 issues after he got shot in the head. And since then, I kind of dropped off. So, again, I'm very disconnected. So I'm going to just say many things. But I believe that the cop who first found the original... cave. Dick Grayson's, like, his little cave there in Bloodhaven. Yeah. Like, it looks like he's the one that's still out there angry while the other teammates are, like, recuperating. And this is kind of like when he's there on a mission, this is where we find Joker. Now, Joker, I kind of like that he automatically knew that you're not Nightwing. And I think that kind of, like, pissed him off. Because you're actually seeing a more... Instead of it being, like, gags, like, you're seeing moments of him doing the gags, but seeing him grab that guy's face and, like, smashing it and actually looking, like, angry, like, I like that because, to him, that's, he's got, like, a joke in mind, but he's being disrespected with, like, this twist. There's, like, a glitch in the game, and, like, he's not for that. So you literally have, in the midst of now we're getting back to Dick and, oh, I'm sorry, Rick, and he's got his migraines going on, I guess, from what the psychiatrist was doing to him that was actually a quarter mile.
The breaking of his, like, his brain is literally breaking. The reason why is because he is finally getting his Dick Grayson persona and memories back into his brain, but they're also being, they're clashing with the memories that the Doctor and the Court of Owls have basically implanted into Rick Grayson. So these, like, there's two objects, you learn this in science, two objects cannot occupy the same space, and that object being memories. Memories cannot occupy the same space, and so he is getting huge migraines, and so that is why, you know, he's sometimes very exhausted, and so in here, he, you know, he does tell his girlfriend Bay, which I thought was a nickname because of, you know, Bay. That's just a term that people use nowadays.
Yeah.
That is her actual name. So, and they reiterate their, I can't talk today. They reiterate that in this issue as well. But they are like, hey, let's go to the hospital. Let's go, you know, get your mind off things. And Joker is found in his apartment. And if you notice, at the very last page, he is taking that crystal that Rick Grayson found in the last issue, and Joker is also putting on a bloody Nightwing costume.
Yep.
So, I don't think that guy survived.
Oh, no, I don't think so either, and I think that sooner or later we're going to get to that point where, you know, you kind of have to have... You have to close, like, this status quo to get things back to normal. So, you know, who knows how it's gonna, how it'll go with Joker here. But again, I mean, besides the recaps, I mean, I guess I'm kind of in that mode of, I'm like, come on, like, I'm pro Dick Grayson coming back. But again, I mean, I only read this, like, because I wanted to see the Joker. There were moments that I really did enjoy how Jurgens wrote the Joker. Because he kind of, I don't know, it felt a little bit more like he was more on the surface. But then you get those classic moments. So it was enjoyable. Not a love, not a hate, just a, you know, it was a decent, okay issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Why don't you go ahead and, well, do we want to talk Hell Arisen or do we want to talk Batman?
I mean, we could do Hell Arisen because it's really quick. I mean, this is just, you saw at the last issue was a standoff between Lex Luthor and the Batman Who Laughs. So you get a little bit at the beginning where Mercy is trying to understand why is Lex doing this? Like, why is he not okay with just being a billionaire and being one of the most powerful men on the earth? And he kind of explains again his reasonings and how do you think it feels like I have fought against these gods and I have also been a part of them with the Justice League. But you know what? There comes these days that you never feel more powerless than when you see these gods fighting amongst you and there's absolutely nothing that you can do about it. You feel like you're nothing. And that's kind of like the driving anger that he does not want to feel that. So, I mean, like, I guess you can kind of understand, well, not really, because I'm not that type of, like, alpha where I need to feel like this, but, you know, they're at least trying to give you an idea of why he is what he is. But yeah, you get a little bit of the standoff. You're seeing Lex fighting Batman Who Laughs, and it's working pretty good. But you actually do get to see a moment here where Lex was able to remove, because of the toxin that he was able to inject into him, where he was literally disconnected from everything of the control that he has had on all the heroes. So they're disconnected, because he was able to have, like, he has a, like, a cure, I guess you could say, to kind of at least temporarily stopping it. Where you actually see a moment where the Batman Who Laughs does not have his, like, I guess his crown of thorns, where he kind of just looks like Midnighter. And you saw him at a moment like, whoa, I've never seen him like this. Like, what's going to happen? But of course, things get to the point where he was able to regain control. And this is now it's pretty much a battle of wits. Lex Luthor now has the Batman Who Laughs in the presence of Perpetua and just trying to get rid of him, but of course he can find ways to weasel himself out of there and pretty much make Lex Luthor expendable, where he's not as important. Like, he's maxed out what he is able to do, and he's no longer valuable. And I think that because he comes from a different, you know, multiverse, like, from, he comes from, like, the other side, he sees things differently from her and from him. So he believes that he has a lot more to offer. So then, not only was... So you got Lexi's pissed off, and because he wants Perpetua to, like, take him out, she's like, who are you to speak like this to me? And pretty much strips him of his powers. So now you have an angry Lex Luthor, who, if you remember from the beginning of the issue, talks about why he needed to do everything that he's doing, because he felt like without that he's nothing. Well, now you see him literally naked. Like, he is bare, like, completely yeah. vulnerable. And he's angry. I mean, he's coming after Perpetua naked, but he was able to get sucked back out. So now it's like, it looks like the Batman Who Laughs, where, you know, you would hope. I mean, obviously, we know what's going on with Metal, Death Metal, that he's a big part, so nothing was really going to happen here. Yeah. Like, oh, man, I wish that she just takes him out. No, it's more, she's like, well, what do you have to offer? And he's like, well, why don't you just look into my mind of what I have planned? And then it just literally ends with both of them like, ha, 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 ha. And then there's like an epilogue where yeah. Mercy finds Lex in a crater. And, you know, he's like, well, like, what's that? Are you okay? Are you alive? He's like, no, we're all dead now. And he's just crying. And then it's yeah. like to begin to. So, I mean, it's literally just like a standoff. I mean, it was, I guess it's a, is it a needed? No, but I guess we have to figure out what was going to happen to Lex. And, you know, his story is done. But you're still going to be seeing Lex, probably Apex Lex, in, like, the Leviathan stuff. So it's going to be all confusing because nothing is aligned. So, I mean, I guess you'll still be, if you're bummed that Luthor is going back to his human form, which I'm pretty sure very few were still digging this Apex Lex. I'm pretty sure people wanted that to kind of go back to normal. You'll still get your chance if you did like it in other books, because continuity yeah. is all over the place.
Yeah. Before I move on to my small description of Robin, I just want to say, you have finally seen the beauty of Dan Mora, I noticed.
I did. I mean, it's just like, I'm looking at these, like, I'm looking at just these random covers, or just, like, these pieces of art, and I'm like, man, that's nice. Like, that's a nice picture. But then I'm like, you know what? These color, like, it kind of looks like him, but I don't automatically, I'm not like, oh, that's Mora. But it's kind of like, you know what? I'm like, I like this. It looks familiar. Like, who is it? And then I just happened to see Dan Mora. And then I think maybe I was thinking it because it was Power Rangers and Ninja Turtles. So, and I know Mora has been a big part of, I think, Power Rangers.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm looking at it. I'm like, okay. So I saw Mora and I'm like, man, you know what? I got to give not only Mora props, but also like a Clay. Because like the more I'm looking at it, I still don't like him for Batman, but I'm liking his work more and more, and I'm like,
I still need to read it, but he did his first interiors for DC back in the anniversary issue for Terrifics, issue 25. And it's like a choose your own adventure type thing.
Okay.
So it's like an extra large book, but it was Dan's first DC project internally. So I still want to read that just to see how he draws Mr. Terrific and Metamorpho and all those guys and Plastic Man. I think he's going to do a great job with that. But I see a small little thread forming with everybody's love with sharing some of Dan Mora's recommendations and you know, things like that. But let's go ahead and move on to Robin just really quick. Mark did not read it, so I'm just going to talk about it just briefly. I love this book because it's not like any other anniversary issue. You know, we've seen it in Action Comics 1000, Detective 1000, Wonder Woman 750, Flash 750. They usually do this formula of, hey, we're going to put the story that goes into continuity in the beginning and the end of each of these issues, and then everything in between are just random stories. But I think the reason why this one worked out so well in the format that they did is because there has been so many Robins. This is the 80th anniversary of Robin, of course, and they were able to add stories to the continuity of each Robin with their respective times.
Nice.
So with Dick Grayson, we see the reason why Nightwing leaves the Batcave for the very first time. Like, as, like, he so we...
This is, like, what, leading into what Tim Seeley and Tom King did?
No. This is leading into, there's an issue of Teen Titans way back in the day where Robin tells the Teen Titans, hey, I'm no longer with Batman, I'm gonna become something else. And, like, this is when he first dons the idea.
Oh, that version. I thought you meant, like, leaving. Okay, okay.
No. This is when he first dons the idea of Nightwing.
Gotcha.
And we never got that conversation. We had never seen why Batman and Dick Grayson didn't, like, really... Like, we got an idea of why they were butting heads, but we actually see the conversation in the Batcave. Here in the very first story, it is Nightwing has noticed that Batman has kind of been a little bit harsher towards, like, civilians and harsher towards villains. And Dick Grayson is not taking it. And he's like, you know what? I think I need to leave. And then internally, like, through, like, monologue, Batman, you find out that Batman was doing that all on purpose to kind of push Dick Grayson into becoming his own person and not just being under him, which is nice. I really like that. The second story we get from Chuck Dixon during Cataclysm, during No Man's Land and all that.
Nice.
And it's like a small, like, it's very subtle, but it's like, hey, this could definitely just be pushed into that continuity. And it just shows Nightwing saving people during that time. It's really, really cool. You know, he saves a woman that is in a car that's falling off of a bridge. And he does it in a really cool way with a crane. And you find out that the paramedic that he had saved right before then actually was able to get into that car. And you find out that that woman that was stuck in the car was actually pregnant. And she got she went into labor and had the baby while Dick Grayson was saving her. And the paramedic says, oh, it's a girl. She actually wants to name the baby after you. And I was like, don't tell him your name. That would be weird. And he's like, oh, well, I guess Robin would work. And so that's really cool.
Okay, nice.
We get stories from the time where Dick Grayson was just Grayson as a spy in Spiral.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. I'm like, oh, Agent 37. I love that. I loved it.
Which is, I will say, I highly recommend it. It is quite possibly my favorite story in here because Dick Grayson is basically... training this new spy, and like he is taking the lessons that Batman told him, and he is saying the exact opposite of what Batman told him, which is really, really funny. But it has purpose because at the very end, at the very last panel, Batman gives him some very last piece of advice. He says, "And Dick, your last lesson is forget everything I said and do what you do best." And Nightwing says the exact same thing to this new spy. He says, hey, you know, you could forget everything I just taught you and just be you. And I thought that was really cool because it also connects with the very first story as of why, you know, he had to leave. He had to be his own person as Nightwing.
That's nice.
We get Super Son story.
Under the Red Hood.
And we get Under the Red Hood.
Was this Judd Winnick?
Yes, it was Judd Winnick. That's why I wanted to say it's the coolest thing, is every creative team that is on these books were the creative team of that time when those stories were.
That's awesome.
That is, like, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about
that's
it.
That's cool. Just
the fact that they did that was really cool. We have a Stephanie Brown story for when she first donned the Robin suit. It's really funny because she makes a joke about how, you know, the Robin suit is kind of, like, not made for a girl. And so, you know, they have Alfred create the one with the skirt and things like that. We have a Tomasi Jimenez Super Son story. And that was amazing as well. We see the boys again and their relationship. Absolutely amazing. And we get a really cool Tim Drake story. This takes place right before Tinian's run on Detective. And he is getting advice from all of his quote-unquote brothers, that being Dick Grayson, Jason Todd, and Damian Wayne, about whether he should come back and be a part of Batman's team. And they all give him some form of advice. But ultimately, you know, he does decide to go with them. It really coincides with the beginning of Tinian's run on Rebirth, which, like I said, I love the fact that DC decided to work with the guys or people that were working on those stories to begin with. Really, really cool. There's a really cool Damian and Batman story to end it with. I didn't entirely enjoy the art on that one, but the relationship between Robin and or Damian and Batman on that one was very good as well. You know, it was Bruce being Bruce, Damian being Damian. They are clashing heads because Damian thinks he's better than everybody. He thinks he can surpass Batman, and Batman proves that he can't. But there's things that they want to talk about that they just won't talk about. And, you know, dramatic irony really bothers me in almost everything. Like, there is something lingering that they both know about, but they won't talk about it. And it's just like, God, you, like, guys, you both just talk it out.
Yeah.
But, it was so good. And I think it's really, it's a $9.99 book, but I think it's worth it. I absolutely think it's worth it, especially if you get the right cover for your fancy. 'Cause of course the, covers were all different. I really want to attempt to find the, which one? It has all the Robins on it. I can't remember which. Yasmin or what is?
Is it like the Nicola Scott one? The one that she's been doing?
No, not
with
Nicola Scott. No, well that one. That's the one with the Dick Grayson Robins. Yeah. I really want to get that one because I have the Detective Comics and the Action one.
The
Action 1000. So I want to get that one for sure, but I do want to get the other one. I can't remember where it has Damian, Stuffy Brown, all of them kind of like jumping or whatever.
Okay.
I can't remember what the artist's name is. I'm blanking on that.
Since you said like, yeah, is it like that Yasmin Putri?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a really cool book. I highly recommend if anybody kind of skipped it because it's such a long, you know, I think it's a total of like, it's almost at 100 pages. It's like somewhere between like 90 to 99 pages, digitally anyway. So really, really cool stuff.
Nice. So to wrap up, we're going to wrap up with Batman 91. So this is Their Dark Designs Part 6 by James Tinian. And then this one here, you do get a little bit more of a collaboration with artists between Rafael Albuquerque, George Jimenez, and Carlos Pagulian. And Danny Meekie. You do have Tomo Morey is on the colors with Clayton Cowles on letters.
I am so bothered by whenever I hear podcasts that reviewing comics and Clayton Cowles is on letters. Because I always hear my name, I'm like, they're always like, and Clayton, and I'm like, I look up, and it's like, Cowles on letters. I was like, oh, god damn it. Okay. I was like, I didn't put show mail onto this podcast. What's going on? But, yeah. So, I mean, this book, how did you feel about this book?
I mean, I think, although in the beginning we did get a little bit of a recap kind of thing of what you saw in a previous issue, I don't know why, I kind of liked the way that Joker did it. just by kind of, it felt very like Jeff Lemire on like the Killer Smile.
Oh yeah,
just kind of like he did his own version with like the devil. I don't know, man, but this issue, it felt very recappy. I felt like it was just hitting on a lot of things that we've already read, and I don't understand. I don't know if this is a version of just where writing is nowadays, that when you have to do a filler, instead of just doing something randomly, you're just kind of adding very new, very small little elements with stuff that we already know. I will say that I did really enjoy the art, because there are moments, especially between Batman and Deathstroke, that the comic felt very cinematic. Mm-hmm. And there were some really cool, like, man, there are a lot of good movie shots here. Especially that whole, like, Batwing with Deathstroke on top of the semi. Like, there's just a lot of moments. I will say that I actually, somewhat to an extent, although it seems a little uncharacteristic when you're seeing Deathstroke and Batman fighting and kind of like when they're talking, and you're just seeing a very desperate Batman where he's just like, I just need you to let me save them. Like, stop it. Like, it felt very, like, desperate.
It was very weird.
Yeah, it was, it was odd.
I will say, it's a very weird pull for Tinian to throw in the Deathstroke versus Batman story in here. Now, he doesn't reference anything that happened there, except for the fact that Batman was like, hey, you know who I am. You know that I have attempted to save Gotham in many different ways. Like, whether that's with my money or as Batman, just let me save them. And Deathstroke's like, no. Like, I don't know, like you said, it's very desperate, and I don't know why Batman would ever think Deathstroke would care about Gotham. So, like, because Deathstroke, he's an assassin. He makes a living off of getting paid to kill people. And he just wants to get paid. So he doesn't care whether...
It's like one of those things that you're like, all right, Batman, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. Do you really think that this story here is going to be the thing that breaks, and it's just going to be like Slade's just going to remove his eye patch and just go, hey, save them? Like, you're not going to get something stupid like that. So... Yeah. I don't know. I was like, all right. So the thing is, like, it was kind of like the dialogue ruined what I thought were really beautiful shots. Yeah. Besides that, seeing Harley and Catwoman kind of going after, trying to figure things out, and you have, like, the designer. Because, you know, they're trying to figure out, like, where's Riddler? What's Riddler doing? And you have the designer with, like, the dead goons with the green ooze kind of stuff going after them. We didn't get anything within that last conversation with Bruce and Selina.
Yeah, no, we didn't get anything from that.
So it's kind of like that, I don't know, to me that feels like it was pushing more on stuff that's current and with their relationship, mm-hmm. and I kind of wanted to know that instead of like, let's go on a wild goose chase for the designer and Riddler. Like, let's figure that stuff out while you have a really weird version of Batman, and Batman, I don't know, didn't take testosterone today, and now, you know, it ran out, and now he's all sensitive. Like, I don't know what happened there, but it was, I don't know, it was weird.
I will say, like, I understand the whole, like, Harley Quinn is insane, like, silly, whatever. Her dialogue felt very weird with Catwoman. Like, I don't know why. To me, it just felt very off. It felt very weird. I guess it was just for the tone that Tinian was trying to build from where Joker started to where we ended up. Like, it didn't mesh very well. So, you know, and I'm also disappointed that, you know, Riddler's plan is actually something else and not what we thought or what I thought last time, which I thought that his plan was Zero Year.
Yeah.
Now, the next book is called, like, something Maze, or, like, let me see, it's actually called The Maze Mastery. I do hope that Tinian throws in homages to the Batman the Animated Series and that maze that Riddler did for Robin and Batman. So, but I don't know. Hopefully, you know, this does...
I hate the Riddler's design. I don't know what they're doing then, but seeing the way that he looks, he looks like you know, have you ever, do you like Red Hot Chili Peppers?
Yeah.
The bassist?
The bass
Flea?
Player?
Yeah. Yeah, he looks like Flea with a goatee.
I can see that. I can definitely see that. I will say, I am still so upset. Still so upset that the one Year of the Villain book that we actually liked, the Riddler story, nothing came of it. Nothing. Because he's still...
Well, I mean, apparently this is his... You thought that you were going to get no more Riddler. And they just completely... And considering this is Tinian and the whole, you know, the gift. Okay, Mark Russell wrote it. But I'm just, you know, I don't know.
I'm so disappointed. I wanted to see Riddler come back as something new. And this isn't new.
Well, I will say that I would prefer the Riddler than that Doomsday Abomination, the thing that they were doing to him. And yes, you're still going to get that, so I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. And I hope that the Riddler's name is not Maze Master. And he's just dropping the Riddler persona, and now he's going to be the Maze Master. Because then,
that
would be weird. Yeah, I would probably permanently drop Batman until we get our new writer. If it's that stupid.
But yeah, guys, I think that is it. That is all of the books that we have this week. Now, I will say, we are getting solicits for June. One thing that I did want to point out to Mark, because I know he's not a really big solicits person, New Comic Book Day is the Generations book. The you know, inevitable, like, 5G thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was going to be books called Generations that were going to come in the following months to basically set us up for what we thought was going to be 5G. Generations number one is not in solicits.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Which does show in, you know, that, you know, maybe DC is putting a halt to some things and replanning, which, you know, we were kind of on our toes about what's going on. Hopefully we will get news soon. I hope that this whole pandemic is over way before San Diego Comic-Con, so that could still happen, and, you know, we can actually get comic book news and things like that, and, you know, the plans for what DC has for the next year and a half or whatnot. So, yeah.
I actually don't even want DC to do news like they do in San Diego Comic-Con. I want them to do what they did at the panel for WonderCon, when they released every single creator and the title for when Rebirth was starting. Yes.
Oh, that was so good.
That was
the
great. You know what? I might go back to it just to see it on the Happy Time, because that was the greatest comic book panel I have ever witnessed. So I would say, you know what? Forget about San Diego Comic Con. Yeah, do that. Do those kind of announcements, because that was great.
I would totally be okay with, like, a social distancing, like, giant, like, Skype conference that we can watch live, like, with that kind of thing. Just to be like, hey, these comic book readers, these comic book fans really need something to, you know, cheer them up in this time of need, and here you go. That would be awesome. DC, if you're listening, please do it.
Please, please. We don't ask for much.
Yeah,
actually, no, we do. We do ask for a lot. But
we ask for a lot. I ask for a lot, to be honest.
I will say. You're horrible. Jeez. You're the worst.
I just want eggs.
You want chicken.
Yes, I need chicken and steak and beans. There's no beans at any of my grocers.
I took them all. You would think that if you buy a lot of black beans, coincidentally, you should buy a lot of toilet paper also. But I think I bought more black beans than I did toilet paper. So I might just have to poop in the shower, because I'm going to run out of toilet paper.
You have plenty of Bendis books. You're good.
Not really. Remember, I sold the majority of my collection when I had So yeah, so I kind of just really buy what I want, and then I'm fortunate enough where I have, you know, I have these review copies so that it gives me an idea. All right, should I spend the $4 to buy the book?
Do you have any Rob Liefeld books?
I'm not sure if I have like a Hawk and Dove from like New 52 or something. I'm not sure. Who knows? I probably still have the number one, but no.
That's hilarious. All right, guys. Well, that's going to be it. Of course, we are a part of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Go check any and all shows that are on that website. You can find me at FanboyClay on Instagram and on Twitter. Where can they find you, Mark?
At Mark Reads Comics, and I'm just going to post more sad New England Patriot news. Because that's all that is... That has completely consumed me. And now my cousin and I, we are literally just doing mock drafts, hoping that, you know, we will be the GMs of the Patriots and figuring out, like, oh, what kind of future are we looking at? And we know that they're not going to do anything.
A grim one.
Yeah, it's going to... Yeah, probably. Anyways, I've had better days. I'm just going to go sit by myself now.
Bye. All right, guys, that'll be it. See y'all later. See ya.